Ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, Bigfoot, aliens, shadow people, vampires, werewolves, demons. Blurring the line between the normal and the paranormal, Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society presents The Blurred Line. Here are your hosts, Sue Shinsky, John Curley, and Matt Haas.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Blurred Line. And this is Sue Shinsky, one of your hosts, along with Super Fantastic.
Best guy in the world, John Curley. Thank you, everyone.
He's so modest.
What's going on, Susa?
Nothing. It's been a long, long day. And we were just having an interesting conversation before we went live here. You have some paranormal goings on.
Yeah, some weird stuff going on. About 20 minutes ago, the dog started, like, just, I heard, like, a small noise or something. In the same room we're in, the dog just jumped up, started barking at something that wasn't there, growling, hair up on his back. Now, where I was just talking to you, I just heard something else up there, and the dog's, like, laying beside me. That's really weird stuff going on here. But, you know, all is fair and love and paranormal.
I actually had something weird happen to me last night, or actually early this morning, that just reminded me. I was sleeping, and I went to bed really early because I had to get up really early to get into work. I'd been out of work since last Wednesday on vacation, so I was going to get up really early and go in and get some work done. And probably around 2 o'clock, I woke up because someone grabbed my arm, and a woman said to me, "You need to be careful."
Oh, wow.
And my eyes, like, popped open, and there was nobody there. The dog was laying, you know, where she normally lays. Pete's working nights, so he was downstairs, and he doesn't have a female voice.
Yeah. No, you don't have a female voice.
Yeah. So I thought, I was like, what the heck was that?
Yeah, I mean, my parents have some weird stuff going on in their house now. My dad renovated an older house, and he's got some things going on. He's kind of getting freaked out about it. He had called me. We were at work, and we worked together, so he's like, man, something really weird happened. Like, he got scratched, like these three scratches on his arm, and he's like, it was literally bleeding in the bed. And my father, he doesn't have any nails or anything like that, but, I mean, he had three big scratches across his arm. There was literally blood in the bed. It wasn't your mother. These look like, they look like a cat scratched him almost, you know. It was really weird. It took some pictures of.
Sorry.
It's weird, man.
I was just, never mind. Cat scratch fever.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird how things are going on lately. Well, just before, we actually have our guest coming on tonight. We'll have Andrea Perrin on tonight. She'll be calling in a couple minutes, any day now.
Yep. She's calling 5 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah. So while we wait for Andrea, yeah, that's really creepy how that stuff's going on. I mean, I don't know.
Well, he said he got tucked in the other night. He said he woke up and he was completely, like, tucked in all the way around.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he said, what the hell? He was freaking out. So he's like, I said, well, I'll come over and investigate. He's like, no, I don't want to know. I was like, well, you already know something's going on.
Right.
it's not a mystery. There's something going on, you know. But there's some weird stuff going on. I had experienced something there once when I lived there. But I don't know. It only happened one time. And then my brother experienced some things that happened with that Xbox connecting. It was creepy.
You and I were talking about that tonight. You were talking about, you know, using that in investigations. But, you know, what happened to your brother?
Oh, he was using the Xbox Kinect, and he was dancing that dance thing with his girlfriend. And you know, it picks your body heat up and your motions and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, he got on it, dance and got off, his girlfriend got on it. Now Figure stepped into the screen with him, with her. It's like, what the hell is that? His name is a glitch in the system or something. So she got off. He got back on. The Figure disappeared. Somebody's calling. They said, Andrea now calling in. So.
It is. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, how are you? Very well, thank you.
We were very, very happy to talk to you again tonight.
Yes. You too. Is John there? John's there too.
He is.
Yeah, yep. Okay. How are you?
Hi. I'm very well. I'm a little, I'm pretty tired.
Pretty you sound tired.
but that's okay, you know, because everything gets done in spite of it, so just not at the pace that I would like. But, you know, other than that, it's all good. Thanksgiving was fabulous. Had my friend Julie Griffin, the author of Ghostly Photographs, came down from Connecticut to Georgia to spend the holiday with me. And we had a great time and posted pictures on Facebook and turned into, you know, adolescents. And it was great.
That's always fun.
Oh, Lord. So how are the book sales going?
Extremely well, kind of through the roof. I'm deeply humbled and gratified. You know, I know this story isn't for everybody. This story has its own frequency, its own vibration, its own wavelength, and it's not for everyone. You know, anybody that's looking for a series of scary stories to make the hair stand up on the back of their neck, this, you know, probably isn't the story for them, because it's really so much more. It's a real journey through 10 years, over 3 volumes. And it's a lot to take in. So for those that can't handle it, I say just wait for the abridged version.
Well, that will come out eventually.
Then you can read the short story. And then you'll go, wow, I need to read the rest of this, you know. So I'll get them one way or the other. I'll get them, you know, because the thing is that the world, as you're well aware, the world is undergoing some rapid consciousness raising.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, I have found, though I didn't really expect it, but I have found in the process of that, that our story factors into it. Millions and millions of people around this globe have seen The Conjuring, and hundreds of thousands are reading the book, and it's just getting going. And I so appreciate the fan base that I've built over these few short years. It's only been 2 years since the first book came out, and wow, I'm astounded. I'm astounded, and I'm deeply grateful and humbled by the experience. You know, the thing that I find most interesting, you know, I don't mean to just go on and on, but I do have to tell you that one of the things that I find most gratifying about having invested 5 years of my life into this project is that I'm getting letters from literally all over the globe from people who had an experience often in their youth that they never shared with anyone in their family or even with a spouse, but that they'll write to me about and tell me about and how it impacted their lives and how, you know, living, having been touched by spirit, living with that knowledge, how it alters a psyche and it changes a person's view of the world. And it's really amazing, and I'm so thrilled to have so many people contact me and tell me how this story has so profoundly changed their lives. That's what it was for. That's what it was for, so that people could feel completely at ease that this remarkable story was coming from in a very credible source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kept it under wraps for 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, literally hidden from society for 30 years. It was time to tell the truth. My mother said it best when she said, "This is not the kind of story that one should rightfully take to the grave. Why experience something like this and then not tell people about it?"
Exactly. And you had so many. I mean, I've read the first book. I'm in the middle of the second book. I'm eagerly awaiting the third book. no pressure.
I'll get it to you very soon, honey. I promise.
No pressure. But there's so many different experiences in the house. And like I had said to you before, you know, what I really liked about the books is that it's not just a ghost story. I mean, there are some very frightening moments, but you do get to know the spirits. It's not that they're this, you get to know their story as well as your mm-hmm. family story.
Right. Yeah, well, to the best of our ability, how we, you know, through memory and mm-hmm. through piecing it together over time, we're able to tell what we knew of them. You know, it's a really in-depth expose of my family. It's an intimate story, mm-hmm. and it's essentially a love story. You know, it was really my mother's love for her children that caused her to fight as hard as she did to overcome whatever influence it was in that house that was attempting to consume her from within.
Yeah. It's,
she's the strongest person I know. Hands yeah. down, no competition.
Wow, you come by all of that honestly, I think. Clearly.
Yeah. I mean, we investigated a case that there's a woman that deals with something in her house. We've seen it and experienced it, and I have to say she's probably one of the bravest women I know, because I don't think anybody I know would stay in a house where you see these black entities in there quite often, in which we captured on video, which is, I don't know, it's a pretty creepy house, but we've had a lot of things happen in there to us as well, so she's a pretty brave woman, I have to say. These kind of things kind of, I think they make you a lot stronger in your will and your spirit and everything. So, yeah.
They do. And the thing is, you know, the thing that we as a global society, as human beings, need to wrap our minds around is that we do live in a multidimensional universe, that there's an awful lot going on that is invisible to the naked eye. But when you fine-tune and when you pry open the third eye, and that happens, you know, when you're touched by spirit, it happens. There's nothing, you can yeah. turn your back on it, and you can deny it, but eventually you will understand that you saw something that opened an eye in your mind that will never close.
Yeah,
it will never close ever again in this lifetime, and possibly beyond this lifetime. It is a gift. It's not a curse. Even the negative encounters are gifts in the respect that they have in their own right something to teach.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's interesting that you put it that way, because one of my questions for you tonight was, you know, out of the many experiences that you've had, what experience you learned the most from?
I would have to say that the one experience that I had that I learned the most from was when I saw the old woman standing on the standing next to me on the hearthstone in front of the fireplace, because her face was identical to mine. But she was dressed in clothing that was popular 200 years before I was born.
Yeah.
And she, you know, I had a head full of hair, and so did she. And hers was all swept up above her head in a beautiful, it was just beautiful. And I looked into her eyes, and I saw my own, and I was like, oh, my God. I mean, that was my moment of epiphany in the house, when I saw myself as another entity, and I realized what the ramifications of that were. And I didn't tell anybody. Everybody in my family saw her, but nobody saw her face. They saw her profile. She was facing me. And I didn't tell any of them what exactly I saw, because I didn't want them to be burdened with the entire notion of having lived in the house before, having some familial attachment to the house. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. That was the first moment it occurred to me that we ended up in that house because of me. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that I had that thought. And I'll tell you, I didn't discuss it with anybody in my family until probably 7 or 8 years ago. I talked to my mother about it. It was the only one that I told. And she wasn't in the least bit surprised. She had her own moment of epiphany in the house as well. And ironically, in the same place, on the hearthstone of the fireplace in the parlor.
That's wild.
So, you know,
did you ever have any things where they, like, mimic your voice as well?
Say that again, honey.
Did you ever have any times in the house when something mimicked your voice that sounded like you or sounded like another family member?
No, that only happened once, and it happened with my sister Christine when she was told to get up off the bed and go put herself in the box, which was the antique trunk in my mother's bedroom, and that almost cost her life. That was the most traumatizing event for Christine because she was never able to reconcile what she heard, what she assumed, what she felt. She never opened her eyes. Something carried her and placed her down in the box. And she was absolutely certain that it was my mother that opened the trunk and put her inside it and closed it. And Chris could not get out of it. It didn't lock. It didn't have a lock on it that worked. They were rusted. You know, it was just one of those old-fashioned metal lined, you know, with stripes of metal on it and old heavy, heavy iron latches on the side. It was a beautiful trunk. But the thing is that gave it away, for me anyway, what gave it away is, you know, as Christine was, you know, poor little thing. She was just a little kid. And, you know, as she's yelling and crying and begging to know why Mom would put her in the box, why would she put her in the box? You know, I heard Christine's protests, and I thought to myself then, why is she calling it a box? You know, and it was because the instruction that was given to her to go to the box, to get in the box, may have been my mother's voice, but it was not my mother.
Yeah.
And it was not something that my mom was in the kitchen with us. I was making tuna fish sandwiches with her. We had just been out singing on the front porch. Our friend Kathy was there. Kathy is the one who found her. Wow. And it was a terrible scene. It was really awful. But the giveaway for me that it was a spirit projecting my mother's voice was that it called it a box instead of the trunk, which is how we always referred to it. It was either the trunk or the antique trunk because we had several trunks, and so you would have to identify which one was which if you were talking about it. You know, go put something in the trunk in the front parlor or in the antique trunk in my bedroom. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So... that was, Christine was really the one that, you know, as I compiled the manuscript, and, you know, it's 1,400 pages.
Yeah.
And, as I compiled the manuscript, I realized that not only was Christine not sharing a lot with either with me personally and directly, or, with the family in general in group conversations as I was taking, you know, copious notes. It took me 3 years to get Chris to talk about the experiences that she had in the house that and her take on them. And I live with her.
Yeah.
It took 3 years.
Wow.
She was the one most traumatized. You know, at first I thought it was Cindy. Cindy went through the worst of it, and she said, you know, when you do interviews and you say it was the best 10 years of your life, which I've said frequently on a number of different shows, she said, you need to qualify that and let people know that that's not true for every single member of the family, that it was the worst decade of my life. I want people to know that there were two sides to it. And I said, yes, honey, I'll make sure from now on that, you know, there's no misunderstanding, you know, Cindy was traumatized. And she was. And it's most of it's in the book. Yeah. Not all of it. Some is just too disturbing to include, and it's too personal. Mm-hmm. But most of it is in one of the three volumes. And the third volume is going to blow people's minds. Mm-hmm. I thought that it would be the easiest for me to complete. It turned out to be the most emotional of all, because leaving the farm severed our family. Mm-hmm. It fractured our family. It was living at the farm was the last time that we were all together there at once, and as a family under one roof. And, you know, of course, children grow up, become adults, move on. Yes, I get all of that. But for us, it was more significant than that, because half of us never wanted to leave the farm, and half of us couldn't wait to get away from it. And I fall into the former category, not the latter. So it was very difficult for me to leave that place. It's the only place that has ever felt like home to me in my entire life. I've lived in a lot of different places, states, houses, but that's the only place that actually feels like I'm home when I'm there.
That's hard, and I guess, you know, you're... Not necessarily, well, I guess you kind of are. You know, you're writing the third book, and you're telling the story of you leaving, and you're also kind of putting this story to rest in a word, I guess. It's going to be very difficult. Because you work so long and hard on it
as well. Oh, gosh, you don't know. I'm in the very final stages, the very finishing touches, the making sure every period is where it belongs, and you know, every semicolon is used properly, and you know, I mean, I'm really, well, you know, you've read the first two books, so mm-hmm. you know that my whole heart and soul goes into not only the text but the process. I'm responsible for the layout of every single page of these books, and it was a obligation and a right and an opportunity to publish the way that I did, because the trade publishers wanted to own this story,
mm-hmm.
own it outright, decide how it was going to look, how it was going to go out, how it was going to be told.
Yeah.
You know, that was the deal. If you sign with a trade publisher and you're not a really big name and a well-known author, and, you know, you're not in a position to call your own shots with mm-hmm. any given publisher, then you become... a victim of the system, and you're at their mercy. And so I took that wild shot in the dark and published these books on my own. And wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let me put it to you this way. It was not a mistake.
Well, that's good.
I did not make a mistake. It was a good decision. And I love, love, love my publisher. I publish with Author House. They're fantastic. I couldn't be more pleased with them. They've been incredibly helpful to me. I work with some of the best people in the entire publishing industry,
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't change a thing. So we're just, I'm very pleased, and I'm deeply grateful, because the paranormal community has embraced this story. You know, a larger community has embraced the story as mm-hmm. well. But the heart and soul, you know, who was at the door to receive it? Who opened the doors wide to receive it was the paranormal community mm-hmm. of people who are kindred spirits and like-minded individuals who were open to the possibilities of the story inside these books. And you know that there are moments in these books that are quite literally unbelievable, that mm-hmm. require a leap of faith by the reader to accept the words and the concepts behind them as they flow through your eyes into your mind.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just trying to form a sentence because help me out, John.
I know the last time we talked to you, we were talking about UFOs and paranormal things. And me and Sue had actually went into a case, and we were talking to a guy that was having, I mean, paranormal things happened to him throughout his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And I popped the question to him. I was like, have you ever experienced anything dealing with a UFO? Have you ever seen a UFO? And he looked at me funny, and he goes, well, yeah, I have. And I looked at him and said, what I tell you, there's a lot of people that at least 80% or 85% of the people that have seen a UFO have had something paranormal happen too. And it's definitely connected somehow.
Well, I do believe that there is integration. I certainly do. And I didn't honestly remember that I had discussed that with you. I have discussed it a few times on several different shows. And I don't know if the percentage that you just described is, you know, scientifically accurate or not, but I get what you're saying. A lot of people mm-hmm. who have had supernatural experiences have also had some kind of extraterrestrial sighting, and I find that that's more and more so. However, it works in the reverse, too. You know, it's like which came first, the chicken or the egg. And yeah. What I think that is, if I could, you know, hypothesize about this a little bit, I think, remember a little earlier where I said we live in a multidimensional world? I think that when that compartment in your mind is opened up because of whatever kind of contact occurs, whether it be on a spiritual level, whether it be with our brothers and sisters from beyond, whatever it be, it opens up a compartment in the human mind that I think probably lies dormant otherwise. It's, you know, a part of our brains that we don't use and probably have its purposes conditioned out of us from a very young age. You know, when the child goes to the mom and says, Grandma read me a bedtime story last night. You know, I think I talked to you about that before. And yeah. Mom says, no, Grandma passed away before you were born. The child's telling the truth. You know, it's we're born. I think that we're born with ancient memory. I feel absolutely confident in saying that there are multitudes of human beings on this planet that are not true human beings, that are hybrids, and I have no qualms about saying that on the airwaves anymore. At first I did a year ago when I did my interview with Devin Belanger from Mysterious World TV.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen that interview. I do hope that you get a chance to watch it. If you don't have a copy of it, let me know later and I'll send you a copy, because I really want you to see it. It's very compelling. And she essentially, in her very proper British way, sprung that question on me, the question you just posed. Have you ever had an experience with her? And as it turned out, the most profound one I'd ever had happened a week earlier, just a week before I did my interview with Devin. It was almost like it was supposed to happen when it did, and she was supposed to ask me that question. And I went from relegating the subject of haunted houses to its own realm. I had in that one day, in that one afternoon while I was doing that interview, I took a leap that I didn't even realize that I was taking. And what I did was I looked at the camera and I said, I'll tell you what I know, but you can't use the film footage. And she said, okay. And so because she said that, I felt free to express what I did on the subject. And thinking, you know, this is never going to hit the air. This, I'll be able to keep them in their own, you know, separate, distinct worlds and not have them. And, you know, I'm ashamed now to say, and I am ashamed to say, that the reason, honestly, that I did not want to intermingle the two was because I wanted my haunted house story to be taken deathly seriously.
Right.
And I didn't want people to think, oh, God, she's one of those, you know? I honestly, that's the truth.
Yeah.
And then when Devin asked me the question and I answered it the way that I did, 6 months later, she approached me and she said, I'm going to send you the interview. It's been produced. We're ready to go into production with it. I need you to review it. And I was like, you know, well, I trust you. I'm sure it's wonderful, Devin. Just go ahead. I'm really busy here. And she's like, no, you need to watch it. And then tell me if I can use it the way that it is. And I thought, and immediately, I immediately knew what she was referring to. And I watched it, and I called her, and I said, yes, my dear, you can put it out. That was the biggest leap of faith that I took. And I have to tell you, I know what I know. I know what I know. And the first sighting that I ever had occurred at the farm. You know, I don't expect everybody else to buy into what I know, and nor do I expect, I don't know, had I not experienced what I have in this life, and I read House of Darkness, House of Light, written by somebody else, I don't know if I'd believe it. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't experienced it myself, I don't know if I would believe it, you know, so... And the same is true with alien encounters. You know, I've had numerous encounters over the course of my life, and several members of my family have as well. So not all of us, but several of us have. And so I'll tell you what, there's some connection. I don't know what it is, but the fact of the matter is that everything is connected. Mm-hmm. Everything is connected. And it's our ability, the veil does not exist. That's our little protective barrier that we've put up. It's just an illusion. It's how we keep our lives, you know, with three-dimensional. It's how we relegate our lives to the use of our five senses. Mm-hmm. But when we open that third eye and we no longer allow it to be blind or it is spontaneously sighted because of an encounter, everything changes. Mm-hmm. Everything does. And this is all happening for a reason. Everything is coming to the forefront for a reason. So, John, I'm very glad you asked me about that and made mention of what you did, because I think that you will find, and people are finding, that many people who've had either one type of encounter or another have had both.
Yeah,
me and Sue both have, so mm-hmm. That's kind of got me into the paranormal, was that, seeing that craft or whatever it was. I mean, it was incredible, and it really launched me into doing this, what I'm doing now, so, I mean, I definitely think
Oh, really? I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I'd seen a UFO when I was around 15 years old in my neighborhood, and... Mm-hmm. My father had actually experienced a lot of paranormal things as a kid, and he's seen a UFO as well. And we just seen another one together like a month ago, driving to work. We're like, see it zip across the sky. I'm like, did you see that? He goes, oh my God, that was definitely a UFO. I mean, it was hauling. I'm like, that was definitely a UFO. He's like, oh yeah, there was no way that was a plane. It was moving. And we both looked at each other, and he still has paranormal things that happen to him to this day in his house that he's living in now. So, you know, it's definitely connected without a doubt. And Sue could, you know, collaborate on as well, because she's experienced a lot of things with UFOs as well, too. So,
it was no accident that you saw that with your dad. That, you know, there was no accident that you saw that. They're only seen by who they want to be seen by, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
They have their technology is so vastly superior to our own. You know, that's the thing. I want to shake the world. I just want to shake the world and scream, wake up! You know, all we do is spend all of our time as a global community figuring out ways to make war and kill each other and maim, and, you know, I mean, the words. The thing, we dare to call ourselves a civilized society, the human race is still intrinsically barbaric. A case in point, in the age of global communication, in the age where ignorance is a choice, the black rhinoceros just a few weeks ago went extinct in the wild, extinct in 2013. On a planet where the vast majority of human beings on it know better, and it still was allowed to happen. And it makes me crazy. It makes me crazy. Now, you know, there are the evolutionists who will be so bold as to approach me and say, well, you do know that 99.9% of all species that have ever lived on the Earth are extinct already. That's not the point, you imbecile. I don't care if you have a PhD after your name. That's not the point. We know better than to maim, mutilate, destroy, target everything of beauty on this planet, including each other. And we don't stop. And it has to stop. This is the beginning of the new age. And there will be voices, including my own, all over the world, that are all saying exactly the same thing. Stop it. Wake up.
Yeah. I mean, it's happening every day. I mean, they're killing off all the sea life. I mean, it's unbelievable. It really
is.
The
biggest problem that we have on this planet right now will require outside intervention. We don't know how to handle. We, the human race, do not know how to handle the disaster at Fukushima Daiichi. And we are poisoning our ocean. And not just the Pacific Ocean. All the oceans of the world are interconnected. It is the life pulse of this planet. And we are killing ourselves with 300 million gallons of cesium pouring into the Pacific every single day from a nuclear facility that is in perpetual meltdown. We've never faced it on this planet in the past, and we are in deep trouble. And the thing that drives me out of my mind is that that's not the lead news story every single night on every single network, on every single television station around the world. Yeah. This is, you know, this makes what happened a few years ago in the Gulf of Mexico look like somebody dropped a pint of oil in a parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, this is so huge, it's almost impossible for people to wrap their minds around. So instead, they choose not to. Ignorance is a choice. It is. We all need to be informed about what's going on there, and we all need to start praying mightily that something, somewhere, somehow comes to help us with this, because we can't fix this. We can't fix it. I mean, when they're talking imbecilic things like freezing the ground around the facility to stop the water from escaping, really?
Yeah.
I am at a loss for words. Now, how rare does, you know, is that?
Exactly. They just sweep it under the rug. They never say it happened, and then now it's like, you know, the news just like it's swept under the rug, okay, like it's not happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. It really is. Destroying our planet. We really are.
Destroying our planet. And God knows they'd better, you know, somebody needs to come help with this. This needs to be the beginning of the end of the nuclear age. This needs to be the wake-up call for all of us. This makes Chernobyl look like a blip on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Chernobyl, which that land is uninhabitable for millennia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Millennia.
It's interesting, you had mentioned, you know, someone needs to come and help. Was it last week, I believe, on the show Paranormal Witness, they were talking about Rendlesham. And I remember reading, and I'm not sure, it may have even been you that was talking about this, how they had seen UFOs on different spots of the world hovering mm-hmm. over where they were storing the nukes back in the Cold War.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
And they disarmed them. And it's interesting that it was left out of that paranormal witness when it actually happened to the nukes. But I remember that. And it's comforting, but scary at the same time.
I don't have any inside information on this, and nobody in the private sector does.
Right.
But I have to look at what just happened recently with, you know, that whole Kim Jong-un disaster in North Korea, where he's shooting off live nuclear warheads. Those were disabled and shot down. I feel absolutely certain that those were disabled and shot down, and we didn't do it. We didn't do it. There is film footage that I have seen. I have friends who are in the upper echelon of the ufology research world. There's this a core group of people who are doing the bulk of the research. And one of them is Paula Harris, and she has 6 books out. Everything that she does in the last 30, 40 years, this has been her main motivation, is to get the word out around the world. And she knows a lot of things. And I'll tell you what, we have a lot to be grateful for, because I saw the film footage released from Russia of the asteroid that came down last February. And that was a life-altering asteroid. That was about as big as the one that formed the Yucatan Peninsula and wiped the dinosaurs off the planet. It would have changed we would not be having this conversation right now if that thing had actually struck the Earth, because we would be, hoarding food and trying to figure out how to get through what everyone would perceive to be the end of the world. It would have changed everything on this planet had it been allowed to impact the planet. But I've seen the film footage. This thing was blown to smithereens in the air just before impact. It was blown into bits, and it was done by our friends. It was done on behalf of our civilization by our friends. I've seen the footage. It's real.
I've seen the video as well. Something definitely hits it and blows it apart before it...
It blows it apart and explodes out the other side a millisecond later.
I've definitely seen that.
There were actually 2 different races that worked together and participated together on our behalf. And all of us should bow our heads and say thank you.
Yeah, where did I see that video? I seen it on YouTube, actually. Yeah, they have it on YouTube.
It's out now, yeah. The Russian Federation apparently released it, not to UPI or Reuters, but released it into the hands of the UFO researchers. And, for verification. And it's quite clear. I've seen it from several different angles now. It explodes several thousand feet in the air before it actually, and I don't know if you've seen any of the film footage out of Russia as they're extricating some of the larger pieces out of it from a lake, but the one piece that I saw, it was literally sheared off like a diamond would be cut. It was literally sheared off. One wall was like a solid, soft, almost polished slab, and then the other side, it looked like it was broken up into pieces, and it came down almost in geometric figures. And it came down in millions of pieces, and not a single life was lost. 1,600 people or 1,200 people were injured. I can't remember, I've heard both figures, but nobody was killed. And that would not have been the case had that struck the planet at full force. That would not have been the case at all. Russia would have been devastated, but what it would have done to the rest of the world would have been just as bad. It just would have taken longer.
Yeah, it would have been very bad. And I watched a couple
of things. We didn't see it coming. We did not see it coming. Here's the point of that. We did not see it coming. They did.
You know, what's weird is, I don't think maybe it was around 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we had an asteroid, a big asteroid that came close to hitting the Earth. And I was in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, just doing a little paranormal investigating on the battlefield. And me and a friend, I looked up at the sky. I was like, damn, that looks like Halley's Comet or something. And they never said anything about a comet on the news, you know, prior to that. And I'm like, man, that doesn't look like Halley's Comet or something, because it had a long tail with it. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, what is that, man? I'm like, I don't know, man. And next day on the news, you know, an asteroid almost hits the Earth, you know. So it's just, they didn't even see it. It was literally too late before they even knew it was here. If it would have hit the Earth, it would have destroyed us, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, we don't have the technology to blow those things, you know, apart before they actually impact the planet. But there are races all around us. You know, that's the thing that people just need to come to terms with, is that they're here. They've always been here. If they wanted to claim this planet as their own, they could have done it a very long time ago. They're not, there's no race that's interacting with humanity that is, you know, there are a few people that disagree with that. There are some threats. I've been told that there are some threats, but that for the most part, absolutely passive, absolutely loving, want to help in any way that they can. And what I say to them is, please help us. Please save us from ourselves. Please. And what that's going to require is disclosure. What that is going to require is full disclosure.
Yeah.
And so I call upon our government and the governments of the world, and any government leaders of the world, to, you know, Dr. Paul Hellyer is one of the foremost experts, the former defense minister of Canada. He's just an absolutely remarkable man. He just recently turned 90. He lives in Canada, in Toronto, I believe. And he said that the group that we are most closely aligned with in the United States Air Force have said, you know, people have died to keep this secret. People have been grievously injured to keep this secret. And there is no blood on our hands. We had nothing to do with that. Agreements were made that were broken. But according to what I've read recently, we are being told that we must absolve all the former presidents that knew about this, and all the, you know, the upper echelon of the Air Force, because they really have been under the guise of the United States Air Force. And that's why Canada knew. That's why Paul Hellyer knew, because we're so closely aligned with Canada. But the fact of the matter is that they've got so much information to share with us that will make our planet a much healthier place, a cleaner place. They're telling us, you know, we're grossly overpopulated. Mm-hmm. There are breaks in our food chain. You know, animals are going extinct on our planet at an alarming rate. You know, on and on and on. And Paul Hellyer has divulged what he knows. And they're saying that the only thing that we can do is forgive everyone who lied to us for the last 60 years. And I say us in terms of everyone on the planet.
Right.
We've been lied to for 60 plus years, that we have known, absolutely known, that there are extraterrestrial beings who are interacting with us on this planet. And this has been kept from, you know, 99.999% of the human population. And that's changing at a remarkably rapid rate now.
I wonder what's going to have to happen for them to finally acknowledge it.
What's going to have to happen, I'm afraid, and in the course of human history, however long we make it, it will not bode well for us. I think what will actually have to happen is that they will have to make their presence known in a rather dramatic fashion.
Like War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
No. No, I don't mean like that. I don't mean in any way aggressive.
No, I just mean
because
the
I
ship
don't
coming.
Believe that there's going to be any aggression at all involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've read about the meteor, the reason why, you know, the long tubular cylindrical ships
mm-hmm.
that came up the back of the tail and then went into it, that race is, you know, they wouldn't even use their lasers on it because they didn't want it to be perceived as an act of aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, they shielded themselves to the best of their ability and at risk to their own lives, plummeted through this asteroid. It could, certainly, they didn't know if they'd come out on the other side. They
Why
didn't
save
know.
Us, though?
I mean, it's so much to think about. It's so much to think about. But we have to think about it now because it is presenting itself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that we can just simply turn away from. In many ways, I think that if we are to be salvaged, if we haven't completely self-destructed, it's going to be with their assistance.
Why save us, though?
Because we're worthy of saving. Because the vast majority of human beings are wonderful mm-hmm. human beings, you know, are good, kind, loving, generous, pure of heart people. And I really do believe that. I truly do believe that, or I just wouldn't want to be here anymore.
And it's definitely possible that we're some kind of off breed from them. You know, that's probably why they're here all the time. I mean, the Bible, I think, is based a lot on aliens and things like that, so it's highly possible we've evolved from them, you know. So
their existence goes so far back into our ancient history, and I'm only talking about our modern ancient history. I do believe that many, many things have existed on this planet and have been lost over the course of millennia. You know, but I do think that the Mayans were right. I think that their calendar was based on the eons. I think that their calendar ended at the end of the age of Pisces, and that it was the end of the world as we knew it in the beginning of the new age when the Piscean calendar ended last year. I do believe. And you know, this is a gradual evolution. This is not an overnight blow up in your face kind of thing. You know, we're getting, think about 40, 50 years ago, nobody talked about ghosts. Nobody did. Nobody. It was a taboo subject. There were just handfuls of people around the country and the world who were dabbling in the so-called dark arts. You know, it was considered, look at how many women to this day pay with their lives because someone dares to call them a witch, that they're dabbling in the arts, as it were, that they are conjuring, as it were. That is a fear-based activity for anyone who even suspects that it's going on. And now we all dress up and glorify the witch on Halloween, and it's all done tongue-in-cheek, and it's like, oh, yeah, they're pagans. Let them go, you know, worship a tree in the woods. You know, I mean, that's how much the world has changed in 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, think of how many films have been released about aliens over the last 40 years. Do you think that that is 40, 50, 60 years? Do you think that that's a coincidence?
Oh, no.
If they can't inform the world one way, they'll inform the world another way. And I don't know who, what, when, where, and how, you know, in terms of the inside scoop. But I will tell you that I do know that every aspect of Close Encounters of the Third Kind is factual. The only thing that's not is where that exchange took place. It was not at Devil's Tower, Wyoming. It was in the desert, 93 miles northwest of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I heard that was actually true. Yeah.
It was actually true. And I knew it when I saw it, and I was a teenager. And I knew it when I saw it. And I said to my friends that I went to see the movie with, I thought, that's all true. What you just saw is real. That all happened. And they're like, you have gone off the deep end. Now, and like, they knew I lived with ghosts. Those right. two knew that I lived with ghosts. And they told me when I talked about that movie being factually based that I had gone off the deep end. So, tell me the world has changed. Tell me the world has changed when 10 years ago there wasn't a single gay person in this society who ever dreamed that 10 years later 15 states would allow them to marry the one they loved.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much the world has changed.
Oh, yeah.
In a decade.
Yeah.
In a decade. And now, I mean, it's like, wow, wow. Sit back and watch this. Wow. It's amazing. It's mm-hmm. amazing. We are evolving at an incredibly rapid rate, which is why it's so important to have conversations like this and, you know, to open up these topics in a forum that is so accessible where people can get a hold of this information.
Well, I'm
taking a breath now.
I was going to say, we've got about 2 minutes until we have to get out of here, which, you know, we've gone down to an hour from an hour and a half. So it's weird for John and I, because we can listen and talk to you forever and we can jabber jaw ourselves forever.
Well, you know, I'll come back and talk with you anytime, honey. Anytime.
Wow.
So you just save up your questions.
Good, good.
You will.
Well, as if people didn't know where to find you, would you like to plug anything?
Yeah. No, just Google me, Andrea Perrin, and anything that you want is right there. Anything that you could possibly want is right
you
there.
You do post very inspiring Facebook messages, I have to say.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm so glad. I love my personal page. My author and book page is great, too. And that's a fun place to follow, and it tells you where I'm going and who I've been with, and it's usually got lots of great pictures, but my personal page is the one that is for inspiration. It's where to go, a nice soft landing pad when you just need to be quiet and look at beautiful things and read great quotations and, you know, listen to inspiring music. That's the place to go.
Well, we did have one quick question from the chat room. Someone, Patty, wanted to know, she said she had heard you talk about DVDs of something with you and your family on another show, and she can't remember, but she wants to know where to get them.
Oh, well, she can get my interview on Mysterious World TV at their website. And she can, and there's a bunch of stuff on YouTube. I have 2 YouTube channels, and my producer, Les Anderson, has things on his channel too. And he does the splendid work. So if she wants to see my family interviewed, she has, hi Patty. She has a lot of choices.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff out there, hours and hours.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I will come back and visit with you anytime. And in case I don't talk to you before Christmas, please do have a beautiful Christmas season and a happy new year. And we will finish book 2, and you'll have book 3 very shortly.
Yay!
And then when I come back, you can just ask me questions about the books, because book 3 is going to blow your mind.
I can't wait.
Awesome.
Okay.
Right.
Well, bless you both. You're just absolutely delightful, and it was my pleasure spending an hour with you tonight.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You too.
Okay, take care now.
You too, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye, hon.
Bye-bye. And I just wanted to give a special shout-out to anyone that's listening on the podcast that isn't able to listen live. Thank you for downloading us. And you can find us on Facebook.com, Harrisburg Area Paranormal Society, HarrisburgAreaParanormalSociety.com. And anything else, John?
That's it.
All right. Well, everybody have a wonderful rest of the week. We will see you next week with another great show. Take care.